Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
Now, Dr. Niall Breen from Portmarnock GP Clinic is with me for this Monday afternoon's Ask the GP. How are you, Niall?
Keeping well, thanks.
Yeah, yeah. All good, good.
All good, yeah.
087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number. Lots of messages coming in, Niall, today. I've developed hard lumps which are sore on my finger joints, just behind my fingernails. They're getting big. I can't wear my ring anymore, so I'm looking for help or any advice to try and reduce the size and the soreness. I do have osteoarthritis and I have my hip replaced. I'm 60 and female.
Okay, it does sound like a manifestation of osteoarthritis. People do tend to get swellings in the joints that they use the most, and that sounds very consistent with that. There isn't a massive amount you can do, really. Now, if they're describing them as being behind the fingernails, I that's probably a little bit different to what we would usually see, but it does
do
sound...
Do they literally mean behind their nail, yeah?
I would say they... Well, I don't know what the person exactly means, but they probably mean that the tip of their finger is a bit swollen or the joint just below the fingernail. So it does sound very consistent with osteoarthritis. If it's extremely bad, you can get an opinion from a hand surgeon. Now, that's an opinion. Mm. That wouldn't be somebody being referred for surgery. So it may be that if they're on all the right care and they have that diagnosis, that they might need a specialist to look at that.
Another texter had an MRI on their neck and it showed protrusions on C4, C5 and C6. What can they do? They're in the know anyway, but...
They are in the know, yeah. So you can, if you took any of us at random in the community and did MRIs in our necks, you would see disc protrusions. So for us, what we want to know is it affecting that person day to day? And usually a symptomatic disc protrusion will cause pain shooting down the arms on one or both sides, usually one side. So if it's not causing the person any pain, I would be inclined just to not really do much about it. They went for a scan in the first place, so I'm assuming that they did have some symptoms. Again, it's something that may need an opinion from a consultant if it's very bad, but a lot of the time these will settle without any particular intervention necessary.
Okay, so just give it a little bit of time?
Potentially, yeah. It depends on their symptoms. If they don't have any symptoms, I would leave it well alone.
And if they do, what about the over-the-counter stuff? Or?
Yeah, you can take pain relief, but for a nerve-type pain, the regular things you get over-the-counter are often ineffective. So you generally do need to take something a bit more regularly. So unfortunately, it's something that might need a visit to their own GP,
yeah,
but if
okay.
they've had a scan, it sounds like they've already been seen.
This text for an interesting message. I've been suffering with OCD for about 50 years. Is there anything I can do?
Yeah, there are. There are certain medications that you can take that'll help alleviate the symptoms of OCD. And definitely there are certain techniques that you can learn that could be taught by a psychologist. We call them CBT techniques, which is kind of just, you know, changing the way you behave, basically. Mm. Again, it depends. I mean, that person might have a diagnosis of OCD, but it doesn't affect them day to day. But most people who have a diagnosis like that, it does affect them. So if that person has it or was diagnosed with it 50 years ago and they haven't attended somebody like a psychologist or somebody along those lines or haven't considered a medication for it, they probably should because things have moved on. Oftentimes we find people with that condition can tend to be a bit reclusive. They might be, you know, in their 60s, 70s or beyond. They might have had this condition for a long time and haven't brought it to the table in a long time. So it's one that it definitely you could alleviate that with medication or the appropriate therapy.
Okay. This texter is wondering if you miss taking 2 days of cholesterol tablets on Friday and Saturday. I'd been drinking one night Saturday. Is it going to affect the reading of the bad cholesterol in a blood test on Tuesday? It's like trying to dodge a test at the school or something.
No, the short answer is no, that it probably... Probably shouldn't. No, it shouldn't affect their blood test result. It shouldn't affect their result.
Yeah, okay. Sudden onset of tinnitus in one ear 4 days ago. Low frequency pulsing. Will I need to see my doctor?
I think if it's recurrent or persistent, yeah. So for us, we see a lot of tinnitus. I think it has come up here a few times, actually. It's a very challenging condition to treat. There's no magic bullet for it. Things that get our sort of interest up a little bit if it's kind of pulsatile, so if they feel it's kind of throbbing, if it's persisting on one side only, if it arises in the context of a head injury or something along those lines. One-sided tinnitus often does, it is something that does need to be checked out.
Okay. 087 1400 106, that's the WhatsApp number. Listener here says, what test should I ask the GP to monitor? I have a polyp in my gallbladder and prominent vessels on fallopian tubes. I'm in my 50s.
So there's no real blood test that you can do to monitor something like that. If they've been given a diagnosis of something like that, polyps in the gallbladder for a start, Again, it depends on the size, but most of the time they go under surveillance. So they might have an ultrasound booked for them every 6, 12, 18 months. Prominent blood vessels around the fallopian tubes, I don't necessarily think that would be anything that requires any significant kind of follow-up unless the person has some symptoms or...
Well, I'm presuming they've obviously been for a lot of testing if they're aware of all this.
Well, what could sometimes happen is the person might have had upper GI symptoms, nausea, vomiting, and when they had the scan, the latter issue that they mentioned may have shown up incidentally. The gallbladder polyp certainly does need to be observed and to be monitored and an eye kept on that. But there's no real blood test, as far as I'm aware, that you can do for that.
Okay. 087 1400 106. Keep the messages coming in. Can you ask the GP about a blemish that's been on the end of my nose since the beginning of June? It first appeared when I was on holiday in Spain and appeared as though it was a pimple, but it's still there now and I'm concerned it could be problematic.
The skin on the nose and places like that that receive a lot of sun exposure, you definitely can get problematic blemishes. If something isn't settling now in what, June, July, 8 weeks or so, it's probably something I would get looked at. It depends on the person's age. But people in the older age group who would have had years of sun exposure can get small cancers, is the technical term, but they grow in the area. They don't spread anywhere and they often can present like that. So things I'd be on the lookout for would be crusting, bleeding, cratering, a central area that, like, if it looks like a really small donut with a bit of kind of tissue or kind of gunky stuff in the middle, that, or anything non-healing really would probably need to be looked at.
Need to get that checked.
Yeah.
Just on the outdoors, listeners wondering about sun cream, and should you put sun cream on a 9-month-old baby before taking the baby outdoors?
I suppose the short answer is yes, especially if it's very sunny. Now, I know that, I suppose, we are a bit concerned about vitamin D and things like that. And if we overdo it on sun, like protective sun factors, then you're not getting enough vitamin D. But in general terms, I would tend to cover a baby up and I probably would put a bit of sunblock on the areas that are exposed if they are going to be out in the sun. But most of the time, babies, you can put a hat on, you can cover them up fairly easily. So you're only looking at putting a kind of sun protective cream on a kind of relatively small part of their body.
This listener is suffering for 7 years with sciatica symptoms daily. Have to go for a pelvic ultrasound. If it turns out that it may be a fibroid sitting on the sciatic nerve after this length of time, is that likely to cause, or will I get some relief then from the sciatica? If it is a fibroid, I mean.
If it is a fibroid, I wouldn't necessarily be convinced that it would alleviate that pain. So probably would need to take it back a few steps. So usually very similar to the first person who called, talked about cervical kind of discs and things like that. Sciatica is caused by lumbar discs and then pressing on a nerve and causing a similar type of pain. So having a fibroid that is growing from your womb or your uterus could cause discomfort as well, but usually of a different type. So it sounds to me like that person could potentially have two separate issues. Sometimes people will use the term sciatica when it's not sciatica at all, but it's a similar pain that they're experiencing in that area. So I suppose, would treating the fibroid settle down the pain? It could potentially. Would it settle down a sciatic pain? I'm not so sure.
Not so sure. So where should they go? Back to the...
Well, if the person has a large fibroid and their doctor thinks that it's causing them symptoms or causing them discomfort, they can send them for a particular procedure where a special type of radiologist can target that fibroid and cut off blood supply to it and it dies off. And often that'll solve some of your pain.
Okay.
So there are options out there if that person has a symptomatic fibroid.
A text from a guy, he's 39, feeling like he can't empty his bladder fully when he goes to the toilet. He's developed it. It's developed into a dull ache in the area in recent times. It's not a bladder infection. Pelvic floor physio and interventions not successful. So any advice?
Yeah, okay. So that person would... So basically, if you imagine the bladder as kind of like a balloon and there's a tube coming out of it that goes out through the penis, and that's basically how people pass water, just sitting at that junction is the prostate. And every man's prostate gets a bit bigger with age. And most of us, it kind of grows outwards. And some of us, it kind of grows inwards a little bit and it constricts that tube. So like that texter had said, it may be that they're not emptying their bladder fully. So there are a few things that we can do in a practical sense. So, and this is anathema to a lot of men, but when they go to the bathroom, number one, take your time, stand and urinate, sit down and urinate, and sit down and urinate with your feet on a stool, because that puts the bladder in three separate positions. Because I describe the bladder as a balloon, but it actually isn't a balloon. The inside of it has folds. So that'll be the first thing. So I'd make sure that they were emptying it fully. If they're getting a dull ache kind of below the belly button, that would be consistent with that. And that person needs to get some investigations, an ultrasound of their kidney system, number one, which is pretty non-invasive, and probably a cystoscopy, which is a camera through the penis into the bladder, which unfortunately is a bit invasive.
Yeah.
But it's a day procedure and anybody who's doing that would be expert at it. And it's relatively quick and uncomfortable, but and not palatable, but not the most painful.
Yeah. So that's just go back to the GP now and look for a referral for that, really.
I think so.
Listener, it says they're 5 weeks pregnant after three miscarriages. After the last miscarriage, I was given a prescription for aspirin and Cyclogest, is that right, for use in the next pregnancy, both of which I'm now taking. I'm on the waitlist for publicly funded IVF, and because of that, I'm reluctant to tell my GP about the pregnancy in case it knocks me off the list and I miscarry again, leaving me with nothing. So should I tell the GP about the pregnancy before the 8 weeks, or would there be anything they'd need to do or tell me, or can I hold off a little longer just in case?
So I would definitely tell your GP. Okay, like if we know somebody who's had a lot of miscarriages and they're successfully pregnant, we're delighted to hear that, and we won't be taking anyone off any waiting list, that's for sure. And also that person would probably be entitled to what we call the combined care system, whereby their care is shared between their GP and the hospital, and it alleviates the cost of their pregnancy care, and it kind of keeps us linked in with their care. So no, I think that's a good news story, and there we hear enough sad stories. Yeah. That's a story I would be happy to hear in my practice.
Yeah, so they should go and have a chat with the GP and
yes,
tell them. Yeah.
Definitely. Usually if all being equal, around 7 or 8 weeks, they'll repeat the pregnancy test. They'll sign you up for what's called the combined care system if you want it. And not just for mum, that just means that hopefully, assuming a successful pregnancy, that the baby's 2 and 6 week check are also covered free of charge for that patient.
Okay, good stuff. Listen, Niall, thanks a million, as always,
no problem,
for coming in to answer listener questions. That's Dr. Niall Breen from the Portmarnock GP Clinic in with us for this Monday's Ask the GP.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.